This is Jet Disler, and welcome to The Piano Maven, your friendly podcast guide to piano recordings. If my voice sounds a little groggy, it's because it's very early in the morning and I just woke up, and I'm drinking water to wet my whistle, and I'm also drinking coffee to wake me up. Do you hear that wind in the background? That's actually the wind blowing up against the windows in my music studio where I record this podcast and where I record my radio show Between the Keys. You see, if we could get enough paid subscribers to monetize this podcast and meet my goal of $2,000 a month, I could definitely overhaul and upgrade every element relating to our production values. So please consider subscribing to this podcast through my Substack page by clicking on the link in the episode description. Paid subscribers get bonuses such as Piano Maven Zoom meetings, where we share listening experiences, and we will be having special guests in the future. I thank all of you for spreading the good word about the Piano Maven podcast to all of your fellow Piano Mavens. And, you know, we are indeed a vibrant and passionate community. And I thank you again for your constant feedback and for turning me on to recordings that even I'm not aware of. That's the whole point of this adventure, you know. I intend this podcast not just to be a guide to recordings, but also a tool to engender dialogue and discussion and for us to learn from one another. On this episode, I'm going to be discussing the Four Ballades, Opus 10, by Johannes Brahms. First, I'm going to talk about the music a little bit, and then about recordings devoted to the full cycle of four pieces. Of course, there are pianists who have recorded these pieces on an individual basis, but I'm going to be talking only about pianists who've recorded the four Opus 10 ballades as a cycle, as a group. In October 1853, Robert Schumann wrote an article that praised the talents of a 20-year-old composer he had only just met named Johannes Brahms. However, Brahms' developing friendship with his new mentor would take on a tragic and foreshortened turn when, in early 1854, Schumann's increasing mental illness led to his being institutionalized. And it was during this difficult time that Brahms composed his four ballades, Opus 10. Ballade number one was described as Brahms as after the Scottish ballad Edward, which is to be found in Bishop Percy's Reliques, R-E-L-I-Q-U-E-S. Do I pronounce that correctly? Reliques or Reliques? Anyway, Reliques. It's called Bishop Percy's Reliques of Ancient English Poetry. Schumann wrote to his wife Clara from the asylum at Endenich in 1855. He wrote about this first ballade's strange newness. And the second ballade's gentle opening andante section foreshadows, I think, the serenity that you find in many of Brahms' late chamber works and solo piano pieces. And again, Schumann was really enchanted by this second ballade. He wrote, "How different, how diversified, how suggestive to the imagination. Magical tones are in it. The bass F sharp at the end seems to lead into the third," meaning the third piece. And the third ballade takes wing from stabbing, syncopated left-hand chords that propel the right hand's main theme. Bum, ba-dum, bum, ba-dum. And the cantabile chorale-like middle section in the piano's high register provides a momentary but welcome respite from the demonic surroundings of the first and last sections, while the fourth ballade is the least overtly dramatic of the group, its meditative qualities reveal themselves through subtle contrapuntal elaboration, as well as a feeling of leisurely improvisation. I like the quote from Glenn Gould about the fourth ballade in an interview he gave to David Duball. Glenn Gould wrote that, "What endears it to me is that it is one of those relatively few works where Brahms lets his imagination, a sort of stream of consciousness process really, prevail over his sense of design, of architecture." So, let's get to talking about some recorded cycles of the four ballades, Opus 10, by Brahms. In APR's 7-disc reissue of the great Dutch pianist Egon Patry's complete recordings for the Columbia and Electrola labels, they included a previously unpublished recording of the ballades from 1945, made for Columbia. Egon Patry also recorded the ballades in the 1950s for the small-budget Allegro label. Generally, I find his playing direct and to the point, if a little matter-of-fact and maybe a little plain Jane. By contrast, there's more nuance and more of a feeling of repose in lyrical sections and a sense of where the lines are always moving. In the 1953 recordings by Wilhelm Kempf for Decca, I actually like these better than his later stereo remakes for Deutsche Grammophon, although I do love the tonal richness and natural singing quality of Kempf's live 1972 performance that was issued on the BBC Legends label. I imprinted on the Julius Katchen recordings of the ballades released in 1966, and rehearing them a half century later, I find that the rhythmic vivacity of number 3 and the central episode in number 2 still excite me to hear them. But I now find the first and fourth pieces kind of glib and facile. I think that Katchen's basic tempo for number 1 is too brisk, really, for what the music is really about. And number 4, I find, lacks tenderness and introspection. I actually prefer a recording of the ballades by another American pianist that was issued not too long after Katchen's originally was. And this is the recording by Earl Wild for the Vanguard label. He's just as big a player as Katchen, but he brings much more awareness of voice leading and poetic shadings to the music. And I think he's alive to each piece's character. So for those who think that Earl Wild was no more than a flashy virtuoso, you're going to find a really serious and thoughtful musician at work here. In his book Conversations with Arau, Joseph Horowitz described Claudio Arau's recording of the Brahms ballades as akin to a great lieder singer projecting in a concert venue, whereas Wilhelm Kempf was akin to someone singing by the hearth. Not exactly a folk singer, but someone with an untrained yet instinctively beautiful voice. Actually, I find the Arau recordings to be more impulsive and volatile and rhetorical, as if not so far removed from the bigness and the sheer ambition of those three Brahms piano sonatas, especially number 3, the sonata I'm talking about. Arau is fiery instead of warm, I think. And if you want warmth, however, without sacrificing structural backbone, I remain a big fan of the studio recording by Emmanuel Axe on Sony Classical. His version, I think, is every much as grounded and expressively proportioned as that wonderful Arthur Rubinstein version from around 1970. They are stylistically similar, Emmanuel Axe and Arthur Rubinstein. However, there was this extremely limited edition from 2005 capturing Emmanuel Axe live at the Lucerne Piano Festival playing the ballades. And I was actually at that concert, and here Emmanuel Axe just lets go much more, and he adapts an uncommonly brisk yet never hectic pace for the fourth ballade. Edil Beret, the Turkish pianist, plays the fourth ballade even faster than Emmanuel Axe, with a real feeling of one beat to the bar. Her interpretations of the first three pieces have a boldness and an edginess that keeps your ears glued to whatever listening device you may be using. This is really fresh and spontaneous piano playing, in my opinion, and I was really happy to hear Edil Beret's Brahms ballades again. They've really got spunk, if you like spunk. And now we're going to get to two pianists who recorded the ballades for Deutsche Grammophon, but who also are represented in the catalog by very different live performances that they gave of these works. I've always thought Arturo Benedetti Michelangeli's recordings for Deutsche Grammophon, the studio recordings released in 1981, to be really meticulous and refined, even though they're a little contrived at times. But there's a much more flexible and fluid live performance with Michelangeli from Lugano, recorded May 11th, 1973. And it was issued on the Aura label on CD. I don't know where you can source this recording now. I remember I first heard it when it came out in a double LP set on the label that later came to be known as Music and Arts. And this double LP also had from Lugano the Brahms Paganini variations, which are wonderful, and the Bach Busoni Chaconne. And I think there was a 1968 performance of Ravel's Gaspard de la Nuit, but I had this double LP and I really loved it. And the other Deutsche Grammophon Brahms ballades cycle comes from Emil Gilels. His interpretations fuse seriousness and smoothness, and the textural evenness and clear voicings suggest something of a modern building more than a rustic cabin. And the music seems to almost speak for itself without interpretive intervention. And I think these recordings have held up pretty well in the five decades since they were recorded in 1975. But there are several live versions of the ballades with Gilels that, to my mind, are more emotionally three-dimensional, less detached. I'm thinking about the BBC recording issued on the ICA label that preserves a performance in Staffordshire from March 22, 1979. Also, the Salzburg Festival performance with Gilels from August 9th, 1976, that was issued by Orfeo. Those are good alternatives to the Deutsche Grammophon versions. Now, we should talk about Glenn Gould's 1982 recording of the ballades. This disc came out after his death, and generally it got mixed reviews. I have always liked it, although there are idiosyncrasies of articulation that you would expect from Glenn Gould. But there are some remarkable details. For instance, in the first ballade, the Edward Ballade, in the central section where Glenn Gould is playing three against two, a lot of pianists are very literal, where you have the ba-ba-ba-bum, ba-ba-bum, ba-ba-ba-bum, bum-bum-bum. Gould slightly elongates the first beat of the triplet. Bum-bum-bum-bum, da-da-dum, bum-bum-bum-bum. He doesn't do it consistently, but his slight inflections of the rhythm generate a lot of tension and really build to a fantastic climax. And that's a performance that I find really remarkable. The others I like just as well, but it's that detail in the first ballade that always struck me. I'm going to jump ahead a few decades to the late and much admired pianist Lars Vogt. And he actually left two studio recordings of the Brahms Ballades. The first one came out in 2001 on EMI, which is now Warner Classics. And it originally was coupled with the Piano Sonata No. 3 of Brahms. And these are good performances in and of themselves. Yet his remake of the Ballades for the Ondine label, which was coupled with the Brahms First Concerto, was released in 2019. And I think that the remake of the Ballades improves on the EMI version in every way. For instance, his slightly faster and more fluid tempo for number 2 in the remake leaves much more of a unified impression. And by taking number 3 ever so slightly slower, he's able to articulate the little notes with more point and precision. You know, the dum ba-da-ba-dum, bum-ba-da-dum, bum-ba-da-dum. They're lighter and cleaner, I think, or at least articulated in a clearer way in the remake. But the main difference is in the fourth ballade. The EMI performance is measured and sometimes emphatic to the point of heaviness, even being pretentious, I think, sometimes. But the remake is much quicker, it's much more supple, it's far more texturally transparent. So there was a real interpretive evolution that I hear, and I would recommend Lars Vogt's Ondine remake of the Ballades as a strong contender. And more recently, on the Beast label, we have recordings from Jonathan Plowright and Alexandre Cantoreau. And I actually reviewed the Cantoreau disc for Gramophone, and I just looked up my review, and it's pretty specific in detail, so I'm going to quote it here, if you don't mind. I wrote that throughout this Brahms recital, talking about the Ballades, Alexandre Cantoreau throws down an epic gauntlet, casting his sights on dynamic and dramatic extremes. The pianist broods over the first Ballade's andante and builds the central triplet section with such overwhelming ferocity that the music runs away from him. However, he is one of the few pianists to successfully articulate the staccatos as a true sotto voce upon the main theme's reiteration. When you hear these in the Glenn Gould recording, by the way, they just sound kind of pokey and exaggerated. So if you do a comparison, that would be kind of interesting for you. Let me get back to what I wrote about Cantoreau and Gramophone. Okay, here it is. I wrote that the Ballade No. 2's distinctions between legato and detached phrases gain considerable intensity through Cantoreau's liberal yet clearly thought-out rubato. Cantoreau adopts a slower tempo for No. 3's central F-sharp major episode, substituting desolation for delicacy. I find the pianist's orthodox gambit plausible, although others may not. Number 4's phrases seem to float independently of each other in an improvisatory state of mind, oblivious to bar lines. Imagine a similarly free-floating yet less hectic parallel to the partial recording of this piece featuring Brahms' associate Ilona Eibenschütz, and you'll understand what I mean. Okay, so that's my quote from my Gramophone review with Alexandre Cantoreau, and his interpretations, I think, are quite absorbing. I think that Jonathan Plowright's approach is relatively more conventional and contained and less iconoclastic compared to his label mate, but it's absolutely wonderful, solid, and stylish playing, and I would recommend him alongside Emmanuel Ax and Arthur Rubinstein for this very straightforward, yet warm, and really beautiful, thought-out, and heartfelt interpretation. So it's kind of hard for me to pick one out-and-out favorite among all of these recordings of the Brahms Ballades. But there is one particular edition that unfortunately is out of print that is one that I return to time and again. It features the Hungarian pianist Dezo Ronki. It was released on the Harmonia Mundi label several times. I have it on a 1994 reissue in Harmonia Mundi's mid-price Musique d'Abord series, and it has this catalog number, HMA1903082. It was recorded in Budapest in 1991, actually. These performances seem to fuse the best of what I like in many of these editions. He gets a true Brahmsian sonority that's built from the bottom up with strong attention to bass lines. There's a fullness of texture that is also very transparent at the same time. And Dezo Ronki gives you solid but never rigidly held tempos that have a symphonic kind of cast about them. And the fourth piece exemplifies what I always mean by controlled freedom, which is a cliche that I use to death. I say controlled freedom way too often. But I always sense from these performances that Dezo Ronki has the big picture in mind, despite the attention to small details of articulation and balance. This is the kind of large-scale perspective that Egon Patry often conveyed in Beethoven and in his recordings of the Brahms Händel variations and the Alkan Symphony and the Bach Chromatic Fantasy and Fugue, but less so in his recordings of the ballades, curiously enough. In any event, if you can find this Brahms disc with Dezo Ronki playing the Ballades Opus 10, it's well worth hunting down. And it also contains one of the most focused and centered performances I know of the Scherzo in E-flat minor, Opus 4. And it has selections from Brahms' various Klavierstück from Opus 116, 118, and 119. Oh, and by the way, remember my recent podcast episode about the Joyce Hatto scandal? Well, Dezo Ronki's Brahms ballades were used for the Joyce Hatto release, but they only stole ballades numbers 1, 2, and 3. They didn't use his fourth ballade, and the Joyce Hatto fourth ballade still remains to be identified. So I hope all of this discussion will be useful for you to sort out the different options that we have for the Brahms Ballades Opus 10 on record. I probably would recommend as my first choices either Emmanuel Axe, Jonathan Plowright, or the Lars Vogt remake on Ondine. But do try to find the Dezo Ronki version and keep Earl Wilde in mind as well. Now, if I was to do a Between the Keys episode where I picked four performances that I liked for each one of the ballades without repeating a pianist, perhaps I would pick Glenn Gould for number one, Arturo Benedetti live in Lugano for number two, Lars Vogt on Ondine for number three, and Alexandra Contaro for number four. This is Jed Disler, and you have been listening to The Piano Maven, your friendly podcast guide to piano recordings. Thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to being with you for the next episode. Take good care.